Good evening, and welcome to tonight's meeting of Inforum, which is a division of the Commonwealth Club by and for people in their 20s and 30s with a mission to inspire debate around civic issues. I'm Robin Sloan from Twitter. Tonight, we're looking at the local media landscape here in San Francisco. When people opine about the future of journalism, they often gravitate immediately to the big national brands, you know, Fox News and CNN, the New York Times, or news services like Google News, Facebook, or Twitter that seem to exist sort of everywhere at once. It might be the case, however, that the greatest upheaval of all, and the biggest opportunity as well, is not with national media, but with local media, with media that's rooted in a specific place, with sites and services, some run by individuals and others by brand new organizations that are custom tailored to the community and culture of a specific city, a city perhaps like San Francisco. So in other words, maybe this is where the real action is. Tonight we have a wonderfully diverse panel, and it's precisely the right people to help us find out if that's true. Jeff Hunt is co-founder and editor of the Muni Diaries, which lets its San Francisco readership share tales of public transit. Brock Keeling is editor of SFist.com, which is a popular local blog and news site. And Michael Manis is VP of Innovation and Design at Gannett and director of the Bold Italic, a new local media project that we're going to learn more about. So please welcome our panel. Okay, I want to dive right in. Often a discussion like this is framed in terms of new media, but the truth is that SFist.com has been at this for a while. This is a blog that's actually been running for several years, sort of chronicling what's happening in San Francisco. So, Brock, I want to ask you, you've been at this for a while, sort of taking on local media in a new way. What have you guys learned? What works?
Well... trial and error and seeing what sticks, of course, works. I don't know, as, you know, I guess making sure you have a voice. You know, obviously I'm not a journalist. I'm not a journalist anymore anyway. Just making sure things are entertaining.
Jeff, at Muni Diaries, you're looking at San Francisco through a very specific lens, the very specific lens of public transportation.
Yeah, no dull moment.
So why? And how does that help you think about approaching a city?
I'd like to think of it in terms of how we got started, which basically, you know, very organically, just telling Muni stories through riding the bus, having these stories, getting the responses from people telling your story to hearing other people's stories. It just struck us as a topic with a never-ending supply of stories and, you know, to varying degrees of compellingness. So that's kind of how it got off the ground.
So you used the word stories sort of several times in a row, and I think one of the interesting things to think about when we think about local media, local news and information, whatever that is sort of, you know, on one hand, you've got the directory, right? You've got information about events and what's coming up. It's almost like raw data that's useful. And the other end of the spectrum, you've got stories. You have people's sort of personal experiences. I guess I'll start with you, Brock, but then, Michael, maybe you can sort of tackle this too. How do you think about that breakdown between information and storytelling?
Oh, I don't know. It's a very hard balance to make. I don't even think I achieve it on a daily basis at all.
So what we found is people are really hungry for stories, and stories still really matter a lot, maybe more than they have in the past. So while the information, there's kind of this kind of information radiation that goes on all the time, where you know with Twitter and your email and how you're signing up in Facebook, where you're kind of surrounded by headlines and things happening a lot, and that's kind of these little, the cycle, very short cycle of information that goes on. But the need for, like, a longer narrative story, people are really still hungry for, and it's really important for them to have.
So. Okay, so you assert that with some confidence, and I suspect that has to do with the project that you undertook at Gannett. You guys took the somewhat radical step of actually stepping back to look at how local news works, what people want, to ask some questions about that. So first of all, why did you do that? And then more importantly, what did you discover?
So the approach that we use, we actually work in a human-centered design approach, which we work with IDEO, that's also here in San Francisco and around the world. But the approach to that is being very anthropological. So over the past nearly 2 years, I've been part of or led teams that have observed about 200 individuals in about 16 cities across the United States, primarily 20 to 40-year-olds, so not much over 40. And the reason that we were really looking at that is to say, like, all this change has happened. So what really is the information needs that people have? Like, how are they living their lives? How do they get informed? What kind of information do they need to live their lives? What's vital to them? And the need is really the key. So when you ask what it is, we're looking for opportunities, obviously, to satisfy a need that might be missed. And what we found was actually pretty shocking. First, digital kind of information cultures are the same in most of those cities. It doesn't vary that much. And what we saw a lot of was the need for subjectivity. People don't believe in objectivity as much anymore. They don't think that they'll be very sophisticated about the arguments on the newspaper or TV show. Well, they'll say things like, you know, I know someone selected the photograph. I know they picked the headline. So that was something that really shocked us. The other thing is that they're really hungry for these experiences and connecting to other people, and they need advocates as well. So there's a real sense that news only goes so far, and then in the remains of whatever the news story is, people want help on building that out. And they're really hungry to connect through community and have that, but they also want someone that guides them a little bit for that. Mm-hmm. So it's a very different voice than we've had in mainstream traditional media.
And so briefly, how did you express these findings? So this is kind of this set of big meta findings about communities and about news. How did you express that in the Bold Italic?
So everything's subjective. It's always point of view. And we're experimenting all the time with this. We're trying to become advocates about people getting engaged in the city and showing experiences and connectivity that happen. And ways to explain the city better and also take a position on something. So it could be a position about, you know, sushi, but it could also be a position about, you know, parks and recreation and bicycle lanes and things like that. Mm-hmm. So that's one. And then that notion that we're not trying to be objective, that we're actually saying this is a very specific voice and this is a very specific way of telling a story and this is a very... subjective or point of view mm-hmm. that we have on that. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we try to do with this.
Got it. I want to just jump in and let people know that you can use the hashtag InforumSF if you're tweeting right now. And if you're listening to this after the fact, you can do a search for InforumSF and find all the tweets that people were talking about. I'll do my best to sort of bring some of those into the conversation. And then we're going to have questions in the last 20 minutes of the program as well. So start thinking. Okay, so, Michael, in what you just described, you were talking a lot about people and sort of people's voices. One of the things that strikes me about Muni Diaries is that it's made of people. It runs on people. It's really, you know, people talk about citizen journalism in lots of different ways, and you guys have almost sort of snuck up on it and by stealth created this amazing army of citizen journalists or something. How have you thought about building that community, and what have you discovered about the way that people want to pitch into a project like Muni Diaries?
Well, if I may just take issue with the idea of citizen journalism as far as Muni Diaries is concerned, what we consider our contributors doing, we don't really consider it journalism, really in any sense. The journalism aspect of our site is something that my co-editor and I, Eugenia, we lay over the storytelling. That's the way that we see it is the people, our readers, our contributors, who are, you know, Muni writers. They're sharing their experiences. I don't really see that as citizen journalism. I mean, every once in a while we have this question of, oh, is this story that we're receiving? Did this actually happen? And at the end of the day, you know, we have no way to vet every single time.
Do you care? Do you care if it actually happened?
It depends on the story. Definitely. I mean, if it's got crime in it, we definitely do a little digging. You know, we check police reports, we check news sources, to verify facts. Mm-hmm. But if it's someone talking about a stranger giving another person flowers on Muni, I don't care. It's a beautiful story, and I'm sure it happens. I mean, I've seen these things happen too. That said, you know, we don't run every single story that we get about someone giving someone flowers.
How is it? So one more question to dive a little deeper. How has have people's participation grown over time?
And has it? In a good way.
Yeah.
It's what we were after, you know, from the beginning. Like I said, when we started, we wanted it to be a storytelling site, and we added the news layer later. But yeah, it's grown in, you know, in such a beautiful way where we, every time we get a submission, we're, we email each other like, oh my God, someone told this amazing story. There's still a sense for us at our day jobs, you know, sitting there working, of these people are just out there writing Muni, and they have a story they feel like telling, mm-hmm. and they send it to us. It's amazing, and we're grateful for it. So,
Muni Diaries, SFist, The Bold Italic. I'd like to actually go down the line and have you guys talk about whether your project is a business, to what degree you think it's important that it's a business, that it's like a going concern, and how you think that fits into just the broader question of local media. Like, does local media have to be about little businesses, or can it, to some degree, and perhaps increasingly, be about individuals? So Muni Diaries, is that a business?
Yeah. No, not at all. At least not now. We all have day jobs, and but that said, we want to grow. We want the site to be bigger and bigger. You know, when I hear of Muni ridership numbers, I'm like, that should be our readership number, 700,000 people a day. And we're far from that. But but for now, we are limited in the fact that we have jobs that aren't Muni Diaries. Luckily, we have a very low overhead, so we don't have to seek advertising. Mm-hmm. But then, like I said, at the same time, we do want to reach out and grow our audience, and we realize that that's probably going to take money. Mm-hmm. So we're exploring different ideas, none of which I'm totally comfortable talking about. But
secret Muni Diary plans. SFist.
Yes, it is a business. Absolutely. Everything. For, I mean, I'm putting out 10 posts a day myself, every half hour. It's not something I receive great pleasure in, but I do enjoy doing. But everything from self-promotion, late-night drunk texts, you know, it's all self-promotion. It's all business. And I like it that way. SFist is owned by Gothamist.
Which is itself a network of city blogs.
Yes, yeah. So right. It's absolutely a business.
Absolutely a business. The Bold Italic.
Absolutely a business as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
All of these, and you can actually correct me if this is sort of a misapprehension, but it seems like the core of all these is some of the things we've talked about, storytelling, certainly things like culture, the lived experience of a city, things like events, food and drink, maybe not local politics, maybe not hardcore local politics and civics. Is that a missing piece, and what do we do about that? Bold Italic, you guys, I'm just calling you Bold Italic, like you're this avatar of this organization.
Yeah, sure.
As you asked people, what did you hear them say about that, and how is it important to your product?
Yeah, so this is another key finding that we had, and especially when we did a lot of research in San Francisco, which has kind of had this history of very being civic activism and things like that. And what we heard back was merchants. People identify the way they live in the city through merchants that they interact with. So we didn't hear a lot about, like, City Hall or, SF MoMA or, you know, the weather in San Francisco. What we heard was, I like living here, and I go here because I can go to Blue Bottle Coffee, and I can go to Zeitgeist, and I, you know, and there's a barter economy, and these are the places I hang out with. And so my lifestyle is defined by these merchants that I interact with, and that was the thing that was knitting the community together, was going to places that you like to go and meet other people like you that like to go there. And by far, we heard that in almost every city that we've done anthropological work in. So
that's super fascinating, and I love it because it is so counterintuitive to the sort of received wisdom of, you know, the experience of a city and what journalism is supposed to do. Does it jive with your experience at SFist and the way
Would you ask that again? I'm a little slow.
So the notion that, so what we're hearing from Michael is that actually the sort of main doorway to a city and the way people think about a city and the way people live in a city is through the merchants that they interact with every day, and maybe also the bus they ride, read Muni Diaries. Maybe not so much through local politicians and the Board of Supervisors. Mm-hmm. Does that sound familiar based on your experience at SFS?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for being that. Well, something I did when I came to SFS was strip it of a lot of its political content, at least local politics, which I love and adore, but I think the city is saturated with.
And so, and you say you stripped it.
Not
of that
stripped,
content.
Just exfoliated gently.
And
because there's so many good, civics. There's so many great other sites out there that do really good political interpretation and you know, journalism and writing and blogs. So yes, I sort of see the city through its stores and businesses and, you know, overpriced coffee that, you know, in a good way, in a very good way. So
this is connected to the issue of sort of local politics and civics. Cities are diverse, and when we think of the people, especially who engage with news in this way, that is, through blogs, online, you know, subscribing to RSS feeds and Twitter feeds, it might not actually, that group might not represent the diversity, the true diversity of a city. Certainly, to be fair, to be candid, this panel and this moderator do not represent the diversity of San Francisco. We got four white dudes up here. Great. Well, I'll actually start with you again, Brock. Is that something that you think about when you think about covering San Francisco and talking about San Francisco, reflecting its diversity?
Sure. I mean, it's not that. I mean, it's not the most diverse city in the world. It's a great city where people are allowed to do whatever they want, but it's not a extremely diverse city. But I do think about that now and then. I do think that I have a masthead where there is only one person of color on the, you know, writing for us. Now and then I do. I mean, I'll be honest, it doesn't come up that much when I'm.
You mentioned just a moment ago the notion that you could safely exfoliate the local politics from your coverage because there are all these other blogs out
yes.
there that cover it and talk about it.
Correct.
When you guys all think about an ecosystem or the ecosystem that you're part of, mm-hmm. well, I guess I'll ask the question specifically. Talking about San Francisco, do we have a healthy local news ecosystem today? Yep.
Oh, I couldn't say whether we did or didn't. It's entertaining, but yeah. I couldn't say whether. I mean, I think that's a subjective term. I wouldn't.
What do you think, Michael?
I think what you see in San Francisco, you're going to see in a lot of places, is that there's going to be many different channels and vehicles that people are engaging in. So there's not these kind of monolithic structures that used to do news and journalism only anymore. They're still very powerful. In that sense, but the diversification and the threshold of for you to be a blogger or, you know, you used to have to spend, you know, $50 billion on a printing press or a broadcast tower, and now you, for, you know, free, you can go and start blogging. So that changes all the dynamics, and I think when there's, we see here, there's lots of niches that get filled, and in those empty spaces, people will rush in. So I do think that has, to your, use your term, as an ecosystem, we've seen that a lot, in that people... they get satisfied with, like, to your point, Brock, with a lot of they're satisfied with the political coverage that exists right now. They don't need more of that, mm-hmm. But they need different ways of engaging that, mm-hmm. And that's totally different. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think there is a diversity and richness to the ecosystem that we'll see accelerate.
That's good. Well, that's good news. All right, sort of riffing on that and the low barriers to entry. You know, the fact that Muni Diaries doesn't, you know, just the maintenance cost is not huge to keep a website running. If I am someone in the audience, either here tonight at the Commonwealth Club or listening later, and I want to be part of this ecosystem, I want to get a domain and sort of get into the game, all three of you have sort of answered this question in different ways in your own work, but what advice would you give to a person like that to get started and actually find a place in the ecosystem? If one of your friends was asking you over drinks, Jeff, what would you say?
Well, not speaking to the nuts and bolts of it, but
yeah.
the ideas behind it. If you have an idea that you feel like people might need to know about or might find interesting, for me, that's all it is. Go for it. I mean, like I think it was Brock who said, just trying things, just throwing things out there. That's the beauty of the internet. You know, things are trial balloons are either going to float or fall. And I think on an individual level, that works too. I mean, there's plenty of blogs out there, maybe not on the local level, but who are just a single person, maybe from their home, mm-hmm. blogging, you know, about designer pajamas. Who knows?
That's my blog. My blog is actually about designer pajamas.
but yeah, I would just say if your idea compels you, go for it.
As a side note, Jeff can instantly name any bus line, the 67.
Bernal Heights.
See?
That's one for one.
Okay, what advice do you give to an upstart blogger that wants to take down SFist, Brock?
That wants to take down SFist?
Yep.
All of you. Now, again, just go out there and do it. Just start doing it. Don't spend a month setting it up. That sounds weird. I guess I'm speaking like a personal blogger. Just go out there and do it. And don't worry too much about what your audience thinks. You can tell them what they should think later on. I'm kidding. But, you know, just any site. Just get a Tumblr site, get a WordPress site. Just start doing it. You can do it from your phone. You get a lot of traffic that way.
What about you, Michael? You had a pretty sort of deep sense of the way this ecosystem works and what fits into it. What's your plan of attack?
Yeah, so I think you need a really good voice. Like, I think that's the thing. It's really refine the way you're communicating and have that distinct point of view. And then I would say relentless self-promotion. You need to build your brand, and you can do that now. I mean, the barriers to building that, thanks to Twitter, another plug, and Facebook, that you can actually create a persona and then spread it across the planet. So, but you have to be good at that, and you have to know how to do that. I think it's really important to focus on those leverages, you know, mm-hmm. to do. Mm-hmm.
So when we think about the kind of people that are good at this, the kind of people that are going to be writers for the Bold Italia, the kind of people that are going to be contributors to SFist, is it refugees from the old world of newspapering, and is it people with journalism degrees, or is it people from a completely different world? And I'll actually pitch that back to you, Michael, because you've been in the business of finding right. people really recently.
Yeah, we've found that a lot of people do have kind of a journalism background. I mean, one, because we're really focused on telling stories on the site and kind of bringing long form, highlighting long form on the web, which is 1,500 words, but for the web is long form, that it helps to have a background of some storytelling ability. We do have a lot of people from a journalist background, but by no means everyone on the site. And I think it's, again, that the point of view is really important, and then coming across with a personality and a character to what you're doing is more important than really where you came from as a background.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'd just like to say for Muni Diaries, of course, our model is completely different, but we do find that, you know, the two elements that make a good post are not only what it is that these people are describing, but yeah, I mean, quality of writing is a huge thing.
Yeah.
And because we are so open to essentially to anyone telling a story, we see, you know, some posts are definitely higher quality.
Right.
Whatever their background is, we don't really get into that. For us, they're a name. They're a Muni writer, and that's what's important. But yeah, we do notice the ability to write
yeah.
is key.
Yeah.
There's still something to being able to put words together.
Yeah.
I want to come back to this notion of politics, because I think we've sort of established pretty cleanly that the traditional notion of covering local politics is, frankly, not necessarily what's needed and not necessarily what appeals to people. But I think there is this notion, and far be it for me to sort of return to like the golden age of journalism, but there is this notion that local media can change things, right? It can change things in a community. So I'm curious for each of you whether you have, frankly, anecdotes or perhaps aspirations to sort of play in that realm of public policy. Muni Diaries, I mean, very specifically, do you think Muni Diaries either has or might change the way Muni runs?
Yeah, I would never, you know, pretend to wield that kind of power, but that's not to say that we don't try.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we... for instance, you know, if we hear that there's a board meeting, and I'm sure SFS does this as well, it's, you know, it's great entertainment to go to the board meeting, but it's also where things happen. And so we encourage our readers to attend these meetings, knowing that if they're reading our site, they are invested in Muni. And I was going to say to the topic of politics, through our own desire to cover, to bring the Muni news element onto the site, we found, especially lately with all the stuff going on with the budget, that there's no way to escape the politics of Muni. And not only us, you know, from the moderation and the creation side of the site, but from a vast part of our readership. I mean, these people are passionate, and they let it be known. sometimes they're telling us some of the politics that are going on.
I actually love that because, that, again, it's counterintuitive and it flips the normal sort of flow on its head, the assumption that it's the news outlet that's sort of leading the charge and telling people they ought to be interested in.
No, our readers know way more than we do.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah. That's great. SFist, public policy and actually changing, you know, law or, you know, changing some politician's career in the city. Is this a thing that you guys do?
I don't, inadvertently, perhaps, but I don't practice advocacy journalism, although I have a strong opinion and I might mouth off a lot, as a lot of my writers do, including you too, in a good way. I don't think that's something I, you know, actively try to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Muni Diaries is definitely not advocating any one thing or the other for Muni. Again, it's nothing that I would pretend to know the answers to, and I find it all really confusing. All I know is that I want Muni to run. But again, I it's the kind of thing where we hand it over to our community of readers who do know, who do attend meetings, who know the policy inside and out, which I find amazing and baffling. But
amazing and baffling.
Well, one of our biggest readers and biggest policy wonks is actually a third-year law student. It's just mind-blowing. And he goes to these meetings and writes about it on his blog. And so,
what about you,
yeah,
Michael?
I mean, so we see that as actually a real a need and an opportunity. So I think what we found over and over again is, you know, people said to us, I've heard this in three different cities around TV news specifically, where they say, I'm tired of turning on my TV at night or in the morning and hearing about two murders from a part of town I couldn't find on a map. And I've heard that, you know, with someone in their home waking up at 5:30 in the morning. I paid them so they would do that, so by the way. I'm not just showing up. Hey. What we found with that is people really need, they want advocates. Like, their lives are really hard, and it's hard to know where to go and what to do. And it's not being dictatorial about it. It's just saying, like, here's some blueprints, here's some guide, here's some ideas, here's directions you can take. And making, really lowering the barriers for someone to get engaged. And, you know, one of the principal ideas of the site is to get people engaged in the city and actually create experiences in the city. And to do that, you have to have a vibrant city. Mm-hmm. So how to pull the community together around topics and issues, or at least give ideas of direction, is really, I think, really important.
And so let me probe on that just a little bit. Certainly that notion of sort of guidance and advocacy might mean, you know, tell me 10 great things to do this weekend, but are you saying that it might also mean, you know, here's how to actually get involved in issue X or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. Or even modeling that. So, like, volunteering, like, what's it feel like to be, we do a lot of the kind of stand-in type of thing, so you can feel the experience of someone going through whatever. So it could be, you know, someone volunteering for the day, and then you get a story around that. It could be, though, also, we did, one of our early stories was how to catch a bike thief. And so we sit out in front of the library, and we, you know, basically had a stakeout and waited for someone to steal bikes and say, like, this is what, you know, I'm like, that's something that happens all the time in the city. So what are the ways that you can kind of counteract that? And just someone going and doing that emboldens you, I think, to say, like, I can do that as well. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. that would be an example of, like, modeling behavior that we think there's a really strong opportunity for. Mm-hmm. So
how'd you catch a thief?
So it's actually, the title is How Not to Catch a Bike Thief, because we didn't, but there's lots of challenging to that, where, you know, challenging people who are like, is that your bike? Literally that statement alone, everyone starts freaking out then, because, you know, you see some giant, you know, 200-pound guy with a pink My Little Princess bike, and you think, well, that's probably not your bike, is it? So that's the kind of thing where, you know, just showing, like, how you would do that. And also trying to start bringing some spotlight to something like that, where it's just, you know, I think it's interesting that I have friends on bikes who are getting tickets for running stop signs, and, you know, we saw this huge bike theft. So there's still, you know, how can we put some focus on something that is really worrisome to people in the city?
Mm-hmm. Where do you guys see this all going? I mean, we're at this very sort of wonderful hinge moment where everything seems up for grabs. Muni Diaries, SFist, and certainly the Bold Italic, which is just getting started. When you fast forward, I don't even want to say 5 years because it's sort of too long, but like 2 or 3 years, what do you want it to look like? What's your dream for your piece of the local news ecosystem? I'll start with Jeff.
Yeah. Pie in the sky is everyone that rides Muni is telling their story. It's totally, you know, it it's nothing we can achieve, and frankly, it probably would be so busy, it would put Twitter to shame. But that's what, but you, well, it would be grosser somehow. No, but still, that's the goal, is to just keep bringing in more writers. I mean, we've seen in 2 years how letting people in, letting people tell their stories, we think gives them a feeling of, you know, of ownership. And they have a, they definitely have a stake in Muni, and they have a stake in what happens on the site and the comments that they get back, and they keep telling their stories. So just to keep, we've seen how that's grown in 2 years, and just we just want to keep growing that.
And I like how you have a clear audience, and you'll know when you've reached them all because there are that many. I'm gonna keep going down the line, but I just want to let people know that we're gonna actually open it up to questions in just about 5 minutes. So if you want to start lining up, first composing your smart question and then lining up at the microphone, we'll start to hit those. Okay, so the future is of SF.
5 years? I mean,
two years, 5 years.
Oh,
2086.
Well, even better. More writers. I love that the young kids can just adapt so much better than some old J schooler. No offense to J schoolers anywhere, but they're just—it's amazing how they just know it. You know, they just pick it right up and know way more than I do about doing this. And more money. More money.
Yeah.
Overall broke.
More money.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we were, that there's a lot of vibrant conversation going through us around what the city is about and what you can do in it, that would be what I think would be mm-hmm. a real win. And also, we're experimenting with lots of different business models, too, so I'd like to see us be able to show, like, you know, brand new post-advertising ways of making money.
Say that's really interesting, and say a little more about that. Again, counterintuitive, one of the basic assumptions, local media runs on classified ads mm-hmm. and other kinds of local advertising.
Right.
What else is there?
There's lots of things that we've, like, I think information brands can be kind of lifestyle brands, so there's things like events. There's partnerships with local merchants that we can do to drive traffic to them. I think instead of advertising, you can do things for marketing. So, for example, on our site, merchants have the ability to target users who've said, "I love you." And so what we found is the user's like, "I would like special offers from this person." And the merchant's like, "I only want to talk to people who get me." And so there's an opportunity there to mesh those two things together in a way that's not advertising-based, but, you know, very thoughtful, and that the merchant can take control mm-hmm. of that in a way that they're only talking to people who they want to talk to.
Mm-hmm. Just to sort of recapitulate, and I'm going to kick off the questions here, but just these counterintuitive things keep coming up, these things that really go against the grain of what people, I think, assume about local media. You know, one thing, the notion that local media leads the conversation. I think from Muni Diaries we hear that maybe actually it follows it and amplifies it. The notion that City Hall is like the center of a city, maybe it's not, and maybe it's actually through merchants and through the bus that people really most sort of deeply and directly connect to the place they live. And then also this notion that the business model might actually look very different. It's not just a new kind of advertising online, but something actually radically different. So just some things to chew on, and maybe we can get some questions about that. So let's kick it off. Introduce yourself and then pose your question.
My name is Julie Crable, and my question is sort of around the business model and where the money's being made. It seems like media is having a really hard time figuring out what to do in this new environment. And do you guys think that hyperlocal media is actually going to lead the charge on figuring out the new money model? Or do you think mass media will figure it out first? They're trying and not doing that great of a job. So, you know, who's going to figure it out first, and what kind of knowledge can hyperlocal media bring to bear for the overarching problem of monetizing media?
Let me pitch that one to Michael first, just because you are at this interesting intersection, you know, Gannett and the bold italic.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of different approaches where we're throwing everything we can in our experiment here to see what sticks, right? So we're trying lots of different models. You know, we know in innovation that it usually takes 4 iterations of something in a business model to get where it needs to go. So you want to move through those and try to figure that out. And I think, but at the same time, mass media is doing much different, like you're going to see a lot more paid content models like the New York Times is doing, and a lot bigger to start kind of you know, wrangling in all the free stuff that gets buzzed around. So you'll see a lot of innovation around that, I think, in the major media. And then on the hyper-local, how do you unlock these small local merchants? Because there's a lot of dollars. 30% of the advertising dollars that are spent in any city comes from primarily small businesses of 50 or less. So there's a large chunk of money, which is why you see Yahoo and Google going after that really hard as well. So
I think it's also important to remember that there are levels of journalism, and that you know you a model like Muni Diaries, where people are telling their stories, would never work if you know, a free model like that would never work for someone covering City Hall. Mm-hmm. You know, if we wanted to have a reporter there, we would have to pay someone.
Right.
Sure. So mm-hmm.
at the mic.
I'm Grace Rubenstein. I'm a senior producer at edutopia.org. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think I've actually heard the word Chronicle yet. So does the Chronicle or something like it have a role to play in this future local media ecosystem? That's my big question. I have a little tiny side question for Michael, which is...
Clarify your big question first. By something like the Chronicle, do you mean a newspaper, or do you mean a big organization fielding dozens and dozens of reporters throughout the city?
The latter.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think, at least for our experience, we depend on, among other sources, we depend on The Gate, we depend on you know, The Examiner, The Weekly. So yeah, it has a role. You know, yeah. We haven't forgotten it. We don't dismiss it at all.
It has a big role. I use it every day. I link to it. So yes, absolutely.
Yeah, unquestionably. I think that what you see is really more the impact of over 40 versus under 40. So there's a giant chasm in the way that people consume news, and over 40 tends to really, really love the newspaper and still use it as a vital part of their daily existence. And under 40 still interact with it pretty high. The difference is frequency. So if you're, you know, 45 plus, you tend to really almost get it and want it every day. If you're 40 under, you'll engage with it, but just not on the same frequent basis.
And maybe two different avenues.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
My other little side question, Michael, is you said you found that people probably don't really want to be bothered with the story about the two murders in some place they can't identify. So what's the threshold at which that becomes something that they want to have flagged? Like, how many murders or how close to their neighborhood?
Right.
Like, yeah, when do they actually want you to tell them about
so
that?
I think a lot of it came from the way that we heard people be very angry that they think major media is doing that on purpose to make them watch all the time. So CNN, for example, like, what isn't a breaking news headline on CNN all the time now? Like, you feel like the world's going to collapse, right? And there's a lot of exhaustion around that. So it's not to say that they don't want to be informed on things like that. They just don't want to be used in a way that's like, I mean, the classic local news thing is, you know, something in your medicine cabinet can kill you, find out at 11, right? So
we should totally steal that. Breaking now, flowers on the bus stop.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So I think what that is they still want, I think we have to rethink what that is, and you have to do it in a storytelling way. I mean, I'm always reminded of the great work that some journalists have done where they've covered every murder, you know, that's happened, but they tell the story of a victim as opposed to two anonymous people killed over here. And so humanizing that again, I think, is important.
Yeah, again, the importance of storytelling.
As
a reminder to our audience on the radio and the internet, this is the Commonwealth Club in Forum, and tonight we're talking, if not the Chronicle, then what, about local media. And right now we're taking questions from the microphone. So introduce yourself and go ahead.
Yes. I'm Ann Valencia, and I'm an experience design director. And my question was directed toward Michael. I wanted to know, in your design ethno research, did you find that there was potential for this kind of media to be made available to suburban or less densely populated urban areas? Or is this a uniquely San Francisco phenomena because of the digital penetration here?
Okay, so digital penetration is the key. But that doesn't mean it can't be in suburban areas, and that we didn't find the same type of digital lifestyles in other cities like Atlanta, Detroit, and Minneapolis, to name four, that we've done research in. That's one of the key aspects. The other thing, since you're a design person, I'll also talk about this. A huge finding that we had was people aren't interacting with content until it meets a certain design threshold. So if you look at the Bold Italic, we're very ornately designed and expressively designed, and that's because people actually don't give you legitimacy in your content unless you meet a design level that they have come to respect and expect. And, you know, things that do that well are Good Magazine, Wired, Dwell. People like, I'm going to look through these. And I might read a story, but I'm not going to pick it up unless the design is a certain level. So,
all right, next up at the mic.
Hi, my name is Sean Allen. And my question was kind of in the same respect that you see the barriers to entry lowering for actual journalism. I'm wondering if you're seeing the same shift in the world of content delivery, and whether or not, like, I kind of, this is along the lines of the same question, whether or not you think people are losing access to information because it's specifically digital, because it is on the internet, because, you know, if people that don't have high-speed internet access are somehow losing in this battle for modern content journalism.
And you're specifically framing that, say, versus a printed-out newspaper that you can get on the corner.
You know, like, is there any potential for, like, a return of print journalism that can somehow recycle this content back into the world of people that don't constantly check their RSS feeds?
I think it's getting more people. Like TV, it gets more people. It's not as aesthetically, you know, pleasing, but it's I think it's getting more people.
Uni Diaries, have you guys ever considered a little printed out version, handing it out on the train?
No, not really. but you know, I mean, we do wonder, oh, if we were ever approached for that kind of thing or a book, say, I don't know that we would be opposed to it. For that very reason, for the purpose of reaching more readers. And then, of course, once they get it into their hands, they will know that they can tell their stories, too.
Right, so. And timeliness is really important, too, with what you guys are doing, obviously. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The thing I would say is you could point to, I've done some work in India, and, like, you know, the newspapers are exploding in India. It's the fastest growing newspaper readership in the world, and that's primarily two things. One, literacy rates are going up and middle class is growing, and then two, women are getting schooled and educated now. So that's a whole, you know, 50% or more of the population you know, has access to something that they previously didn't. But it also is that it's like, you know, an engaged, growing democracy kind of thing, and people are really into that. And then I would say that we've experimented with stuff and kind of getting back to the other question around there's a real potential for cell phone and I think what we saw in Iran too with Twitter and those things where the dissemination factors that you're beginning to see in Africa, for example, around cell phones is a potential for that could eventually be back into it and lead back into some type of print format in some way. But I think it's important to have a brand that exists across all of those mm-hmm. spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Next up at the mic.
Hey, Josh McHugh with Attention Span Media. And Robin, something you said earlier was really interesting when you said that there is still something to being able to put words together. But looking at you guys up on the panel, what it sounds like is that people are getting enough of a reward from participating. I mean, I don't know how much you guys are paying people to write, if anything.
We don't pay anyone anything.
Which is what I figured. So is the role of the sort of intrepid writer, you know, the muckraker, as far as being important enough to get paid for, is that on the way out? And the new most important role, that of a curator and someone who can just reach out there and distill the important things from the, you know, the noise.
I sure hope not. Yeah, to answer the first part of your question about the intrepid reporter, whose job it is, whose, you know, livelihood depends on doing that, and who basically is the expert and can't necessarily be replaced by the blogger in their pajamas. I really hope that's not on its way out. Our model and the way we've run things up to now, we depend on that. You know, like I said, we depend on the Chronicle. We depend on SF Gate, SF Appeal, SF Weekly, Streets Blog, SF. We depend on all these people whose job it is to do that reporting. So I sure hope not. I don't have the answer, though. I'm not a business person.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be going anywhere.
Yeah, and we actually do pay writers. So I think that, and we feel like the kind of level that we have to get at is someone with the polish and the rewrites and the experiences that they're doing, that it's fair to for the pay model, and that's really important, I think.
Have you looked at paying people according to how much attention their stories generate?
Not yet, but I mean, it's something that that's certainly a model that you could look at. But as a startup right now, we just want to make it, you know, have a really great experience on the site, and so it's important to have a level of quality to that. So.
Next up at the mic.
Hi, Andrew Pichero from Current TV. So all of you guys have mentioned that you rely on the Chronicle in some way, and the reason why we're here tonight is that the Chronicle itself is in dire peril, some would argue. And so my question is sort of about the future of that space, specifically in the city, that kind of professional reporting space, which all of you guys say we still need. You know, the Chronicle is a local institution. New York Times has come in and started their Bay Area section, and you know, I'm wondering sort of, especially even on this panel, Brock, you're with Gothamist Network, which is now owned by Cablevision as of this week, and then Michael, is that, or, yes.
I'm sorry.
The Gothamist, yeah. And either
no
way, Gothamist
that,
is a right. is a national right. Syndicate, and Michael, you're with Gannett. I guess I'm just wondering, like, do you guys see in San Francisco a space for national conglomerates to come in and start different news outlets? And that's where we're
Yeah, that's where everybody started. As you mentioned, the New York Times is trying to do that. The Wall Street Journal, I believe they just did the same thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
As long as they're hiring local people and not, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that is a tough thing. They do hire people who aren't necessarily familiar with the area, which I think is fine. People adapt and you learn how to live in the city after 2 years. Well enough. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I think the thing about San Francisco and why you see so much going on is it tends to be a digital trendsetter, and we're really talking about whatever solution we're coming to, there'll be print, but digital is really the unknown space. So there's a lot of rush around saying, you know, what can you get on the ground? If you make it work in San Francisco, there's a good chance it's going to work. It's going to cascade out. So being on the pulse of what that is here. And the other thing I would build out is to say that we found why the digital life, the digital cultures of people around the information cultures around the country were similar, the lifestyles of that. The voice and what they expected out of it needed to be locally authentic, and we heard very distinct things around that. So most of the people, if we said, you know, who would, if you had anyone in the world you could choose to report news and information to in San Francisco, who would it be? And almost everyone said Anthony Bourdain. So, but you can see it's cynical, irreverent, kind of in your face, you know, or Jon Stewart was another popular one. But, you know, someplace like Minneapolis, it's Ira Glass and Rachel Ray, like a totally different thing. So the need for that local voice, I think, is really important. And I think any media and wherever they're at need to exemplify that or they won't be around.
I wonder what would happen if we sent Anthony Bourdain to City Hall.
Yeah. People want that. They want that's yeah. exactly what they want.
Yeah. Be in your face.
Okay, next up at the mic.
I'm Blair Frank, and one of the things that was brought up is the idea of the blogger in his or her pajamas. And I was wondering, how have you guys seen that reflected in people's reactions to your content and also in sort of the representation of your content in larger public discourse?
And just to clarify, you're asking about the stuff they produce getting filtered back out through the blogosphere.
Right. And or alternately, just how the stuff that they produce is seen in general, not just among, you know, people who are familiar with the blogosphere, but, you know, your over 40 crowd.
Like their reputation?
Yeah.
It's not great. But yeah, I mean, it's not a romantic title, being a blogger or online writer, as I prefer to say.
there's some branding issues. Muni Diaries, you don't really frame it as a blog, do you?
No, we don't. No. It's a website.
Really?
Remember those?
Blogger?
and bold italic, riffing on what you're saying about design, you actually seem to take great pains to make it seem like a magazine, perhaps more than what people think of as a blog.
Yeah, I mean, I tend not to use the term magazine, but it's like we really try to create a really amazing local experience, and that might be, it could be on the website, it could be an event that we have, it could be, you know, something that we got together and produced with the local merchant. So I think it's all about creating a branded experience more than anything. But, we heard loud and clear that people like blog formats because they can look at it and go up and down the page and see everything, unlike a lot of the way that classically newspaper sites have been designed where you have to dig underneath all the whole time. So we took the blog kind of flatness, but also we knew that we needed to have a very high design caliber to it. So
to be clear, you're making a branded experience in your pajamas.
Yeah, right.
Not just writing a blog. Okay, question at the mic.
Saheli Dada, and this is sort of riffing on Grace and Andrew's question a little bit more about, you know, what will happen if we don't have those beat reporters anymore. Jeff said you'd have to pay someone to go to City Hall, And Michael's contention about how people identify with merchants and not with politics, sort of leads to the question of, well, if the readers don't want to know what's going on in City Hall, and we are now in the process of giving the readers exactly what they think they want, then who's actually going to make sure that City Hall doesn't do whatever they want when everyone's at home in their pajamas? And so I was wondering if you could sort of make the connection between that and this idea of guides. I was really interested in this idea of guides and volunteers modeling engagement. And is there any idea of guiding people away from just looking at restaurant reviews all the time? Or
let's pose that to these guys as sort of a design challenge. If you were going to cover City Hall in a more serious way than what you're doing now in each of your sort of domains, how would you do it? What's your strategy?
So I think the first thing I would say is people do care about it, but only when it impacts their life. So that's very important for them when that time comes, right? So this is the unknown, is how do you make sure you have strong coverage when it impacts your life and before that, and it's too late to do anything about, right? So that's the first thing I would say is what we're trying to do is reconnect with people and get people to read stories and find out what that means, so therefore we can channel that in a different way. In terms of your question of how we cover City Hall, we would do it very, we'd stay away from it as long as we can, but what we would do is say, this is what this, the City Council voted this way, and they voted this way, and this is what this is what's behind that, and then how can we, what's the kind of advocacy position we could take for that, right?
I don't know. A very incredibly well-designed, very experiential, bold italic style take on, a day at City Hall.
Yeah.
Could actually be pretty interesting.
We've actually talked about, we're looking at doing things that we're doing 24 hours in this place in the city where we do it every single level. So you would be about the experience of City Hall more than it would be about what City Hall's doing. So
we actually did something similar with one of the town hall meetings where Muni was coming out to explain some of the upcoming changes. And, so they said to take public input. We'll just trust them on that. But we found one of our readers was going to the meeting, and I asked her, I was like, oh, are you going to be tweeting, blah, blah, blah. And I think she did, and we tweeted that. The next day, she wrote on her personal blog a story. Going back to the storytelling, she wrote a story about her experience of going to City Hall, a little bit about the policy, which we appreciated, but we ran it as a story, and we got a good reaction to that. So I think it's possible to have storytelling in addition, maybe it's a storytelling package that has policy in it.
Right.
I think it's possible.
Yeah, I find this really compelling. I think it's still largely conjecture at this point, but the notion that the expertise is out there, maybe you don't actually need a beat reporter, but if you can, to sort of the questioner's point earlier, if you can curate in the right way, maybe you can actually sort of pull together these really sophisticated stories about really complicated issues. It's an interesting idea. Question at the mic.
Hi, my name's Tom Preet. I was essentially the last editor of a defunct newspaper called The Independent that those of us who've been here for maybe more than 5 or 6 years might remember. And although we were inserted into people's driveways for free, people got it whether they wanted it or not, one of the things I was always concerned with was whether people read it regularly, not just do they read one day's front page. What I've wondered about, as we hear a lot about the fragmentation of where people get their news, that is, they may get a story from, Muni Diaries one day or the SFist one day and go to the Bold Italic for a different story the next day. Do you guys worry about repeat viewers? Do you monitor that stuff? Do you have any way of knowing it? How much of a role does habit play in building an audience for your site? And then, as long as I'm here, if I can insert another question.
Let's just stick to the one,
sure.
because I think it's actually such a rich question and actually something I'm surprised we haven't talked about yet. Online media, you know what people are reading and maybe even how long they're spending on your site. So briefly, because we don't have much time yet, and I'd like to get at least one more question in. What do you guys know about your audiences?
Well, according to analytics, over 50% of my readers are habitual users. So it's very important, yeah.
We absolutely depend on regular readers and contributors to build the community, to maintain it. We couldn't do anything without it. And we're about the same, like about 50% or slightly more of regular readers.
So we look at that religiously, and the thing that's interesting for us that is exciting, I think, for storytelling is that our top five stories on the site are averaging over 4 minutes and 30 seconds. And our average time spent on the stories is 3 minutes and 40 seconds. So it's the inverse of what you normally see on news stories, where the more people see it, the less the time it goes up. We're actually inverting that. So the more popular your story is, the more time that people are spending on it. And if you don't know, like, the average is anywhere for a news story online is anywhere from 33 to 56 seconds. So the fact that we can generate a near 4 minute on average is crazy, and people would not think that would be possible. So.
Okay, last question from the microphone.
As was mentioned previously, Gothamist was just acquired by a larger company. And so to the panel, how do you imagine it's going to affect local media, hyper-local media generally, as larger corporate concerns and larger media outlets purchase or, you know, throw a hand into the hyper-local media environment?
How important is it that local media is truly local in both its provenance and its ownership? SFS, what do you think?
It's very important. Although SFist has been owned by Gothamist, which is based in New York City, I can't tell you anything about the purchase, whether it happened or not. But we'll see. We'll see. Hopefully, nothing will affect the content quality of the site. But it is a good concern.
A very diplomatic answer.
I think ownership by corporations outside of the city, you know, I don't think it should be generalized. I don't think it's a necessarily evil thing. I think I might have said this earlier, but as long as the people who are doing the work are local and they know the beat and it's genuine from the ground, for us at least, from the ground up type of stories.
Yeah, I think you'll have. I mean, unless you do local well and you get a local audience and a local authenticity, no one's going to pay attention anyway. So I don't think it matters who owns it. You can be a local owner and not get the voice right, and no one cares. Or you could be, you know, Murdoch. And if the local site does a really great job of pulling that together, then I think people reward you with traffic and you know, eyeballs.
Good point. Okay, we're going to wrap it up now with a sort of special lightning round. At the end of these Inforum panels, we'd like to ask people for their 60-second ideas to change the world. So no big deal. You just have to change the world. And does anybody want to go first? Is anybody just like burning up with their idea to change the world?
Yeah, go.
It looks like you wanted to do it.
No, before.
All right, Jeff.
Well, this has been on my mind.
And we're just going to go straight down the line. Yeah.
This has been on my mind, and it's another counterintuitive thing, which you seem to really like. But as much as I want you reading my website, get away from the computer.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
That's it.
No, stay on the computer. I see, you know, clean surfaces, high gloss white, just clean everything out.
Wait, is that your idea to change the world?
Yeah. Low lighting. That's the future.
You guys, you can follow up with Brock about that at the party afterwards. Michael, what's your idea to change the world?
I think everyone should become an anthropologist. So the more you pay attention to what humans are doing, the more needs and problems you can see how to find solutions for. So.
Away from the computer, though.
It's a great line. Get away from the computer, surround yourself with austere white surfaces, and pay attention to what human beings actually do. Thanks, guys. Listen, let's give a big hand to our panelists. Now, this meeting of Inforum and the Commonwealth Club is adjourned.